With great mojo comes great responsibility. Mojo 5-0. Mojo 5-0.
We will make America great again.
Sam Sorbo.
All right, and welcome to the Sam Sorbo Show here on Mojo50.com and on podcast. And we're going to get right into this. It seems like the world is just spinning out of control. I've got some great audio for you, but I mean, even the NFL is tearing itself apart. Michelle Obama has addressed the graduating class now with some profound words, and we'll get to all of that. But first, my guest with me is David Marcus. He writes at The Federalist and several other places, and he writes satire, which I find something so appealing, frankly, because I think that it's warranted to have a little bit of humor, but also to kind of dissect what's happening in our culture right now. And so, first of all, welcome to the program, David Marcus.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So you wrote a piece called "I'm the Rapid Response Social Worker Who Replaced the Police," and you made a couple of quips in there that are surprisingly poignant in terms of, first of all, just to describe it for the audience. We start out in the hospital and you say, "I'm not going to lie, this isn't exactly what I expected lying here in the hospital. I mean, it's only a few broken bones, a punctured lung, and some stitches to the head. But I almost feel betrayed." And this is somebody, you are somebody in this article, you are somebody who has basically bought into the whole woke culture, thinking that social workers can respond to violent criminals. And yet through the article, you sort of point out, "I tried to stop the robbery, but that didn't go so well. And now they're very wealthy." That actually made me laugh. That was just one person, though. One person who is really rich now, because he knocked you over the head. So talk to me about your take on what's going on right now.
I do like to employ satire. I don't do it all that often. I do it every once in a while. Several months ago, I wrote a piece about how the progressives are wrong about climate change, that we don't have 12 years to fix it. We only have 3 days. So really, by Saturday morning, if we haven't worked this out, you know, everyone's going to be on fire. And this felt like a ripe opportunity for it, because I think that a lot of what's going on right now, especially regarding the protests, is what you can think of as like a bait and switch or a Mott and Bailey. So you think about a term like Black Lives Matter, and it really operates in two very distinct ways in our culture. One way that it operates, when Mitt Romney says it or when it's put on a NASCAR car, is as a very general expression of solidarity with the suffering of Black people or against prejudice. It's a general term of solidarity. It's also a distinct organization with a very clear Marxist agenda. So these are two different things. I think when most people are saying Black Lives Matter, they don't mean the Marxist agenda. They mean the general solidarity. This is also happening with defund the police, right? So first you say, well, defund the police. And you're like, well, that's crazy. Like, who's going to show up at the armed robbery? And then they say, oh, well, we don't really mean defund the police. We mean police reform, or we mean taking away some of, you know, their duties. So people have to pay really careful attention to what these terms mean, because the meaning is constantly changing.
Yes. And it's funny. I thought maybe you were the person who wrote a piece about that, but I just read a piece about that we actually look at the word racism in two different ways. And so,
yes.
Was that your piece? No,
that was my piece.
It was brilliant.
I believe it was. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, thanks. Yeah.
Yeah. It was brilliant. No. Explain it to the audience. Go ahead.
Yeah. Basically, there are two not only distinct but oftentimes contradictory ways in which Americans define racism, loosely on a sort of partisan divide. Those on the right tend to have what is the classic definition of racism that requires there to be intent, animosity, some sort of actual belief in the inferiority of some group of people.
Right. A judgment about a person or a group of people that involves the color of their skin.
Yes, exactly. And that is sort of the classical definition that, you know, if you're as old as I am, you kind of grew up with that. Now, if you're 10 years younger than I am, you might have grown up with a very different definition that has to do with things like implicit bias, unconscious bias, systemic racism. The idea that racism is not some bad thing that people are doing. Racism is the air that we swim in. Racism is connected to every aspect of our society. And so really the only way to get rid of it is to break down the systems of society and rebuild them. So these are two very, very different, not quite opposite, but as I said, to some degree contradictory views of racism. And until we're able to have a conversation about those two, we're not going to get anywhere because people aren't meaning the same thing when they use the word.
I don't think we're going to get to the point of being able to have that conversation, though, because there are people, most people who have bought into the systemic racism sales pitch don't believe that, really, they have no solutions. Their solution is simply destruction. And so, and because they've bought into it so fully, they won't walk back from it. So,
yes.
In other words, you approach there's a guy who just did Avi Yamini. If you're not familiar with him, he's an Australian, and he went to a Black Lives Matter protest in Australia, and he asked people there. There's an Australian woman who was killed in Minneapolis by a black police officer. She was white. She was unarmed. Why didn't we protest the police then? And she's Australian. Like, why are we protesting now but not then? And one of the answers from a white woman was, well, white supremacy.
Right. And I think what you say about destruction is really important. I'm working on a piece right now about HBO deciding to not stream Gone with the Wind, which I guess happened yesterday.
Just happened, so, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, now...
I just have to point out, I'm sure you're going to put this in your piece, but to the audience, Hattie McDaniel was...
yes, that's exactly what the piece is about.
Right.
Oh, well, that's it.
Tell us.
Yes, that's it. Hattie McDaniel is the first black person to win an Oscar. She won it for Gone with the Wind.
Now they're basically erasing that movie.
Yes, and not just that movie, but... You know, they've been the entire concept of minstrelry and minstrel shows and all of this has been erased from our culture, mainly because there were a lot of instances of white people dressing up in blackface. But that's not the full history. In fact, that was the artistic form that Hattie McDaniel came up through and that a lot of early black film actors came up through. So when you just throw the baby out with the bathwater, when you just say, like, this makes us feel uncomfortable, so we're not going to talk about it. Ultimately, you're hurting everybody's history. And, you know, to not let people see this amazing performance that this incredible artist gave against all odds. I mean, her parents were slaves, you know, is horrible. It's just horrible.
That she played a lovable slave who loved her mistress, which was a complete departure from I think the problem that they have is not so much that it depicts slavery, but that it depicts the possibility that some slaves actually like their masters and their masters like the slaves, which is a horrible thing to say. And yet it did exist in history.
Well, it's complicated.
But here's the thing. So they don't care if they erase history because they are dead set on what? Destruction. So they win if they win and they win if they lose, in a sense.
Yes.
Because they're just dead set on destruction. And until we, as conservatives or as Americans, can acknowledge that the enemy isn't trying to make this a better place, they're trying to destroy this place, we're fighting against spirits. We're not fighting actuality, right? Right? When we give them quarter and we say they really just want a better life for black Americans, but they don't. They want the destruction of America, which will not provide a better life for black Americans.
Yes, I think that's right. And I think this notion of fighting with phantoms is something that conservatives have to be very worried about. I ran a piece yesterday that was, you know, arguing that the Republican Party really needs to be full-throatedly behind the police in the United States, the vast, vast, vast majority of whom do a wonderful job. It's one of the most popular institutions in the United States.
What are they saying about black police?
Well, of course.
I mean, yeah.
Yes. So, but, you know, one of the things, you know, so I wrote this piece, and one of the things that I said in the piece was that the police in the United States, there's no systemic racism within the police departments of the United States. And one of my younger editors got back and was like, I don't know if that's true. Like, can you really say that? So, you know, I found a bunch of the data. Heather McDonald at City Journal is very good on this. There's some other people at the Manhattan Institute. And I found the data and I made the argument and I said, listen, if you start arguing with systemic racism on that field of battle, you're never going to win because it is a phantom. It's not
right.
Something that you can draw the question out
no,
of.
Let's define it. Define it for a moment, because you have to define your terms, right? So if we're all against systemic racism, what is it, right? We have to figure out what it is before we can defeat it. And the problem is that the way that they define it is America.
Yes, exactly. No, that's exactly right. I mean, what was the purpose of the New York Times 1619 project? Ultimately, it was to reframe the American experiment, not as an experiment in, you know, a sometimes failing and often struggling experiment in liberty and freedom, but in fact, an experiment explicitly designed to be racist, to be oppressive. There's a battle for the soul of America and what it means. And what conservatives have to do is they have to stop worrying about being, you know, called a bigot or a racist or whatever. And that's not to give anybody permission to say offensive things. It's just to say, if somebody comes at you with a ludicrous charge, you need to stand your ground.
So what do you make of Drew Brees, right?
I think he
tweeted basically that he did not like when people knelt at the Star Spangled Banner because his relatives fought for their freedoms, and so he thought that disrespecting the flag was wrong, and he's now apologized because he understood that what he said was racist.
Yeah, two things about that. I mean, first of all, a couple summers ago, I had the real honor of attending a week-long seminar they do at the Army War College. And at one point, I was talking to the general who runs that at a little reception that he had. And it came, I don't know if it was 6 o'clock, I think, but it came to be the time to do the colors and the anthem. And he explained to me in great detail how much that meant to him and to all of the people under his command. So yes, I mean, Drew Brees's original statement, is meaningful. Like there are people for whom this is very important. And his apology, I mean, look, I don't know why he did it. Maybe things would be uncomfortable in the locker room. Maybe he just wanted to get it behind him. But typically apologizing in these situations doesn't go well. I mean, you saw the mayor of Minneapolis, you know, surrounded by protesters, confessing his own privilege. But what happened when he refused to say he'd abolish the police? They booed him and they practically tarred and feathered him. So the apology almost never goes far enough.
Oh, no, I don't think it. I think all it does is embolden them. And then you become their bitch, in other words.
Yes.
You know, and if you don't. Right. As in, for instance, the Minneapolis mayor, by the way, Joe Biden is also not for defunding the police. So I don't know how they're going to cancel him. But if you don't toe the line the next time, then they will cancel you again. It doesn't matter how many apologies. It doesn't matter how woke you've been in the past. There is no history for the left. It is only the now. And this is what people don't understand. And if they studied a little bit of history, which they don't in school, they would know that when you're dealing with the left, you have no value. You have no value unless you are furthering the leftist mantra.
Yes, I think that's right. But yes, right. Because ultimately, the cause is less about individuals and individual liberty. The cause is more about the cause itself.
Well, let's be clear. The cause is never about individuals or individual. It's not about the individual. The cause is always about the cause. And so, it's sort of like if you want things to be, there's a phrase for it. If you put a penny across the room and you advance halfway to the penny, how long does it take you to get to the penny? You never get to the penny because you're only ever halfway. And that's the cause. So you'll never get to the cause because you'll only ever be halfway. And if you do a photo op with a Bible, that's bad. If you do a photo op on bended knee, that's, you know, but next week, the bended knee, that won't be enough. You need to kiss the ground. And then the following week, you need to lie prostrate.
Yes. You know, we saw that happen. I mean, you know, I do think that even the mainstream media reaches a point where it becomes so ludicrous that they can no longer push for it. But you're absolutely right that
I have not seen that yet.
You're not hearing some of the, you know, things about just utterly destroying capitalism that are in these, like, you know, proposals or whatever. But there's nothing. Well, there's very little that's aspirational, right?
The Green New Deal is utterly destroying capitalism. That's what the Green New Deal is.
That's true.
Okay.
That's true.
They haven't gotten there. They do
that defund the police thing with it, right? They say, oh, well, we don't really, it doesn't really mean no cars.
They do want to defund the police. They are only walking it back so they don't lose everybody. But they throw it out. This is the Hegelian dialectic. So they throw it out there and then they're willing to compromise. But the problem is the compromise is halfway there. And then they throw out another thing and they're willing to compromise. And then you're another halfway, right? And so defund the police. Look, what's going to happen when they defund the police? The sheriffs are going to step in, but the sheriffs are only going to step in to the high tax paying communities. It's the black communities, the lower income communities. This is not a racist thing. I'm just saying the minority communities, the lower income communities that will suffer. What we're seeing right now, the destruction of black businesses. Do black lives matter? I guess not.
Well, I mean, I also think that what you'd see very quickly and what would shut down any such effort is the first time that an unarmed social worker or mitigator or whatever you want to call these people, the first time that they walk into a mental health situation and get killed, this is over. And because this, you know, People want the police to be robots, you know, people want to imagine that, like, the police don't have fear or, you know, don't have emotions. But there are situations where it's easy to say, oh, well, if it's just a mental health crisis, then why do we need it? Well, what if the mental health crisis is somebody who's suicidal, who's, you know, considering maybe taking somebody out with them? That's not a situation that you put a social worker into. That's a situation that you put a police officer who's trained to use a gun into. So I'm trepidatious that you're going to see. I'm doubtful that you're going to see too much actual movement in this direction because it's insane.
I wish I had your optimism. I already see too much movement in this direction. You see, and I think that they're targeting police now. If police were as bad as this movement makes them out to be, there would be a lot more police shooting. I'm sorry. Like, there would be so many, we would lose count. Because if you're a police officer and your feeling is life has no value and I just need to protect myself, this is survival of the fittest, then every situation they go into, they shoot the suspect dead and they're done. In fact, I had a friend who used to joke about Italy. So in Italy, they have militia walking around in airports and stuff. And the news stories are always the robber tried to get away, was shot dead. Like always, like every news story ended with, and he was killed by police. We don't have that in the United States. We have a presumption of innocence that still sort of pervades the thinking of the police force. And so even when they know that the person is like dead to rights, you know, they've got him, they still allow justice to work in the system because we have this naive understanding that we have a justice system and it works, not always, not perfectly.
I think it's the opposite of naive. I think that what's naive is the utopian idea of people saying, you know, we can never let this happen again. It's going to happen again. I mean, as long as there's crime, as long as crime exists, and crime has always existed, we're going to need a police force capable and strong enough and powerful enough to overcome that crime.
Right.
When you give 900,000 people, this is about how many police officers there are in the United States, that much power, some of it's going to get abused.
And by the way, they can go into the police force, you know, Pollyanna, and thinking that they've got their cape on their back and they're ready to do good for the people, and be corrupted when they're in the police force.
Absolutely.
Because they're human and things happen. And we don't know. We don't know the relationship that Chauvin had with the victim. We don't know. There's too much. There's a lot that we don't know. What we can say is that what happened that we saw on that videotape was wrong. But to tear down the entire system, to then make that leap to that was racism, it's systemic, it's pervasive throughout the police, like to make all of these other leaps, and then the knee-jerk response of, well, shut down the police. Well, what is that? That's actually reflective of shut down the economy because of COVID.
Yes.
So now we're in a shutdown culture. We're just going to cancel everything. And where will that lead? My problem with the shutdown was always that we never had an exit strategy, that we never counted the cost of the shutdown. We only counted the cost of COVID.
Yeah.
And now we're looking at this again. We're saying, well, shut down the police. We're not going to count the cost of shutting down the police. We're only counting the cost of having the police. But the shutdown is going to cost a lot more.
Yeah, I mean, there were always legitimate competing interests in regard to the lockdown. I think it was about 2 weeks ago that I wrote what was the cover story that day of the New York Post, just calling for an immediate end. Just, like, this is ridiculous. People are dying.
You're my hero.
Awful. But you know, what was so insulting about the fact that all of these mayors who were telling us like, you can't have 10 people in the same room for a funeral, rolling over
right
when these protests happened.
Right.
Scientists saying, well, you know, in this case, maybe it's not so bad. I mean,
right.
That's not frustrating. That's infuriating.
Right.
And there really needs to be an accounting done of how these decisions were made, who was making these decisions, and was anybody thinking about the economic, emotional, psychological, addiction, like all of these other tolls? Or were they just ignored?
No.
And it increasingly looks like they were just ignored.
Exactly. That's exactly correct. And that's been my problem since day one. I understood a 2-week shutdown.
Yep.
Because, hey, let's take a step back. Let's just stop and see what's going on. But then after that, to not do some daily debrief of effects was horrible. And we're walking the same line with the police. Now, if Minneapolis, the good news is we're a federalist society. Speaking of the federalist for whom you write.
Yes.
And so if Minneapolis does this, they will be an interesting case study. Chicago also. But Chicago's rife with crime right now. What's going to, I mean, the problem is that they seek to destroy and they succeed.
Yeah. I mean, listen, the story of I'm New York correspondent. I'm a very proud New Yorker. And the story of New York City's comeback under Giuliani in the 90s and then under Bloomberg in the 2000s was just an absolute revolution in policing. There was a computer system called CompStat, which much more than anything like broken windows or stop and frisk, the CompStat system for the first time allowed the police to really dig in deep into exactly what blocks and what neighborhoods crime was happening,
right.
So that they were able to allocate the resources. Now, to progressives, this is oppression. Oh my God, like, why are you overwhelming Black and Latino neighborhoods with police officers? But the upshot of it was we went from over 2,000 murders a year in New York City in the early 90s to under 400 today.
Right.
So it's remarkable. And you know, like I said, I do think the good news, and I think the way the progressives are overplaying their hand here is just how well the police actually poll. Forbes in 2018, and that was well after a bunch of these scandals had already happened, they polled the most trusted institutions in the United States. The police came in third behind only the military and small business. So, you know, ahead of religion, ahead of local government.
So, ahead of the church. That's a good one.
Because people know, right? I mean, you know that if something happens, you can call these people and they have to come help you. I mean, that means something to people. You can't, you don't erase that with a slogan. So,
all right.
You know, and that's another reason I think that the GOP really needs to be full-throated in their support of the police.
I agree. And that's a great way to sum it up. I've got to run because I've got another guest coming on. But David Marcus, he's the New York correspondent for The Federalist. You should go to The Federalist and check out really all of his writing, especially the I'm the Rapid Response Social Worker, because it'll put a smile on your face. And it's brilliant. And I'm an enormous fan. So thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Take care.
Okay. Bye.
Oh, my gosh. That was awesome. He knows how to play ball. Am I right? All right. So Terry Crews. No, well, let's talk about Drew Brees for just a minute. So Drew Brees said this thing and then he apologized. I'm going to play you a little bit of the apology because this is a cautionary tale. Never do this.
I know there's not much that I can say that would make things any better right now, but I just want you to see in my eyes how sorry I am for the comments that I made yesterday. I know that it hurt many people. Especially friends, teammates, former teammates, loved ones, people that I care and respect deeply. That was never my intention. I wish I would have laid out what was on my heart in regards to the George Floyd murder, Ahmaud Arbery, the years and years of social injustice, police brutality, and the need for so much reform and change.
Okay, so he's just literally like prostrate on the ground. And it won't be enough. And I don't really know who he's like trying to placate, although if the NFL went to him and said, hey, this is what you have to do. But they're idiots too, I'm sorry. There's no great way to come out of that. To add to that, and to add to the craziness. And if you didn't see Tucker Carlson last night, don't. No, I shouldn't say that. Look, I adore Tucker. I think he's great. Sorry about that. I think he's great. But he had an entire, it was like almost the whole show was basically talking about how we are self-destructing. And so we need to like buck up and start paying attention. And he really took the Republicans to the mat because Mitch McConnell is the most powerful man in Congress, right? Most powerful Republican in Congress. And he's doing nothing. Like he's basically just acquiescing to Nancy Pelosi these days. There's just nothing. So to that end, you know what? We're going to have, I got my next guest and this is terrible because my notes are not up to date. All right. Never mind. Horace Cooper. Is that you?
No, Kathy Barnett.
Oh my gosh. Kathy Barnett. Well, okay. So they switched guests on me at the last moment. Kathy Barnett is running for office. Right? You can fill in the blanks, Kathy.
Oh, I'm so sorry. It cut off for a few moments.
Oh,
yes,
sorry.
I am
okay.
Running for
She's conservative.
Office in Congress.
Right.
You're
African American, and you're here to discuss the George Floyd death, but how it's being used to burn the country down. So I just had another guest on, and we've gotten to this point. The left seeks to destroy America. The right refuses to acknowledge that. So the right is basically.
Well, that's a good jumping off point. But let me just say, I mean, I was listening to your intro before I even came in about what's going on on the Republican side in the Senate. As usual, Republicans have been caught flat-footed. They have no idea this was coming down the pipeline, and as a result, they don't have a response to it. Can you hear me okay?
I can. So far, so good. You're brilliant. Keep going.
Yeah. I mean, but no, and whereas on the other side, right, if you think about China having a 100-year plan, well, guess what? Democrats have a 100-year plan. And that plan has always been very progressive. So, you know, we're often amazed at how quickly Democrats seem to be able to just pull out of some magical drawer and dust off a perfectly manicured plan or solution to whatever the issue of the day may be. And that's exactly what we see with their new policing program. Where, although on the other side, Republicans, we just want to maintain. We just want to go about our lives. We just want to, you know, pay our taxes.
It's in the name.
Send our kids off to school.
It's in the name. It's conserve. Right?
We just want to conserve, right? And whereas Democrats, but specifically a very radical element within the Democrat Party, is constantly moving forward. They will call it progressive. We know, because most of us understand history, it's anything but progressive. It's regressive where they're trying to take us.
Right. So they want
They
want to defund the police. That's regressing back to the Wild Wild West.
Hello. Exactly. That was my next point. Or federalize it, which now looks very much like Hitler's Gestapo, right? Where you have this federal branch of policing that no longer is accountable to you and I, no longer has to adhere to you and I and what we think is necessary for our community, but instead they get their directives from a much higher level, from a federal level, which, you know, even in this time, as we're looking around at the incumbent here who represent us in the House, I'm getting a number of people saying she's not responsive. She doesn't respond to us. We're talking to her and she's sending us form letters, right?
Right.
But that's what happens when government gets more and more and more out of our control, out of the control of the most local level.
Right.
So I went to bed thinking exactly what you were talking about, that here we go once again, Republicans getting caught flat-footed, confused, looking like a deer in headlights, have no idea what the proper words are to say. And so they tapped the lone black senator, Tim Scott, to come up with the plan. And everyone's just sitting there twiddling their thumbs. And in fact, it's something my team and I, we've already been talking about it, have already started putting it together of what exactly we need. As I'm listening to more and more people, even on the conservative side, they too are recognizing perhaps we do need some modifications in how we police. Now, I am not of the mindset that our policing in this country is systemically racist. I do not buy that. I don't buy it for a number of reasons. One, I grew up in the deep south of Alabama. I know exactly what racism looked like, and I know exactly what the history of this country has been. And I have the ability to walk and chew gum, and I can see that our nation has done a tremendous amount of work to move themselves forward, to move all of us forward. And I recognize the effort that our nation has done. But just like the Emancipation Proclamation freed the slaves but did not give us equality, the 1964 Civil Rights Act began to give us equality. So now today is our time to actually pick up where we left off with the Equality Act and begin to find ways to make people inclusive, to include minorities, those who may be marginalized or disenfranchised or underserved communities. Now's the time to begin to go from freedom to equality to inclusion, And that is what we're actually coming together with.
Well, that sounds awesome. I just, I'm a little bit leery because when we sought to include people in home ownership, we blew up the real estate market. So when you're talking from a federal level,
yeah.
Right?
The problem is, I mean, what the problem generally is that, and specifically within black communities, you can almost look at the black community as a test run for what progressives are trying to shoved down the throat of the larger, of the broader American culture, right? So if you look just at the Black community, the problem often is that we get all these federal dollars. I've never seen a Democrat who didn't like a federal program. And so they want all these federal programs, and then the money goes into the hands of bureaucrats, goes into the hands of mayors. And for every dollar, maybe the community get 5 cents on a dollar, right? And it's all about coalescing power, control, getting their buddies into office, and all, I mean, because like that's the perpetual thought of politicians, and I don't think people understand that. People in America think these politicians are our friend, and our founding fathers had a very healthy schizophrenia about coalescing power.
Right.
That the perpetual thought of a politician is always to gain power, maintain power, or extend power. Rarely is their first thought in the morning is how I can make your life better. So we have to remember that and get a healthy balance. But that's the problem with all of these federal programs, is that the money goes from the federal government, i.e. taxpayers, and goes straight into the hand of bureaucrats who miraculously come back to us and say, oh, we need more money to make it work better. And it never works. What I'm suggesting is what Lyndon B. Johnson administration, actually, I think it started under maybe Kennedy, started, but Democrats saw that it was working so well that they strapped it, and they called it community action programs. And it is actually finding autonomous, self-managed organizations within these more distressed communities who would take ownership of their own community, hold people accountable within their own community, and then the government comes alongside to help them in that regard. So you don't give the money to bureaucrats or mayors, but you find these autonomous, self-managed organizations and allow them give them the voice and the platform and all of the underbelly that is needed for them to be effective within their own community. So you're picking community people who have a proven record of actually going into the streets and doing something. One of the problems in the Black community is that there's very little ownership oftentimes of our own community. Hence the reason why you see it in the state that it's in. We're always looking up to a bureaucrat to solve our problem or to pick up our trash. So that is one of the things that I'm talking about. And it's all about accountability at a local level. The more granular you can make it, the better the results are going to be.
Well, I wish you were opinionated about these things. No, I'm kidding.
I know, right?
The name of the book, the name of Kathy's book is Nothing to Lose, Everything to Gain. My guest is Kathy Barnett. You're brilliant. So let's talk about the destruction that we're seeing. Defund the police. How do we? Here's the thing. There, you don't subscribe to this idea of systemic racism. I need a definition, and I need some examples of systemic racism, because I think
slavery was systemic racism.
Great.
Jim Crow law.
Great.
Was
well,
systemic
slavery
racism.
Slavery exists today. But nobody's talking about it. But right, nobody's talking about it. So
right, but no, I mean, so if we just focused on your question, what is the difference, right? Now, do I believe racism exists? Of course, racism exists.
Right,
human beings exist, and racism is nothing more than hate, and it can be as unmovable as a parcel of land. So, of course, individuals have that ability to have race to be racist. I'm not
right.
Seeing just as many Black racists as I have white racists, right? So racism exists in this country. But but what can the government control? The government cannot jump into my brain and control the way I think. The government can influence the way I think, right? And we see that happening all the time. A variety of bills and policies we would have never thought would be mainstream today.
Well, we
so
see it in our schools.
Exactly, right? Systemic racism, you said example. So slavery was systemic racism. Jim Crow law was systemic racism.
Yeah.
Blockbusting and redlining communities
right.
was systemic racism. There's a list of actual things that our government. I remember I grew up in very rural southern Alabama. I remember that it wasn't around. Jim Crow wasn't around when I was born, but the lingering effect was still there. I remember watching documentaries about a Black man taking it into both very well.
Okay, so I'm going to cut in here because you're just cutting in and out right now. I think you moved to a different spot, and so we're having trouble hearing you. But you were saying that there was systemic racism. The question now is, because the left is saying, okay, but there still exists systemic racism. And because systemic racism exists, the entire system must be destroyed. And I would like to know what they're planning to put up instead.
Well, they're not going to tell you that. Can you hear me okay now?
Yes, now you're brilliant. Go ahead.
They're not going to tell you that, right? Because it's not in your benefit to really know what's coming, what hammer is coming down next. But, you know, it's kind of like saying, you know, with these protests, right? There are some peaceful protests. I participated in a peaceful protest. I'm a Black woman married to a Black man raising Black babies. I have a stake in all of this and how all of this turns out, right?
Right.
So I want my voice to be heard. I want to be a part of it. I want to influence people, right? I know that what I subscribe to and what I don't. But so there are peaceful protests that are going on, but we all have seen that in the midst of some of these peaceful protests, there have been agitators. There have been people who are bent on making us ungovernable. You have the looter, you have the peaceful protesters, you have the looters, and then you have the agitators who are bent on making us ungovernable. So now, because there are a few bad apples in that bunch, should I close down all protesting?
You can't close down protesting.
Well, you can't close down all protesting, right?
No.
But there are a few bad apples in there. We've seen that. So now should I leap to the conclusion all protesting is bad?
No, of course not.
Okay, likewise, because there are a few bad apples in the police department or in Wall Street or in banking or in the dentistry industry, should I close down all of it?
Well,
no.
Exactly.
That's illogical.
Right.
But that's where we are, because emotions today now have a direct pipeline to making laws. And when that becomes the dominant thing, we are all in big trouble. We won't have our liberties for long.
So you're absolutely right. It's become too emotional, and that's a result of our schools. And part of it is and I love that you said they seek to make us ungovernable, because then they can usher in totalitarianism, right?
Yeah.
How do you make somebody ungovernable? You make them angry.
Goodbye. Make them angry.
You give them a feeling of entitlement, and then you give them a brick, which is exactly what they've done. And so, by the way, you tell them that life has no value. You teach them from birth. You teach them from being a young child. Life has no intrinsic value because evolution, and we're just a collection of molecules with chemical reactions that just happens by accident. And so everybody is just here accidentally, and there's no purpose for life. And by the way, survival of the fittest.
Right.
Well, what is the looting and the rioting if it's not survival of the fittest?
And, you know, shooting David Bourne, the 77-year-old retired police chief in the face. I mean, the value, or the white woman that they beat mercilessly in front of her husband, in front of their store when she was trying to stop them from
looting.
I mean, it's anathema, and it breaks my heart.
No,
find ourselves.
That's what it is. It's you're in my way. Survival of the fittest, baby. But this is what we've been teaching in our public schools for decades now. Survival of the fittest.
That America at its core is rotten. That America is the worst thing on the planet. I completely disagree with that. America is the greatest country that has ever existed, because it was founded upon the greatest political document ever written, the U.S. Constitution. The U.S. Constitution is not perfect, but it is the greatest document, political document ever written. And it is about law and order. And when you take law and order out, like I said, all of those other liberties that we run around here talking about and loving, you know, it all gets thrown out the window.
So how do you take law and order out? You remove morality. And so if it's a good law.
John Adams said that.
Right. If it's a good law, then I'll follow it. But if it's not a good law, then survival of the fittest.
That's right. You know, John Adams said our Constitution, which is law and order, people, our Constitution is made only for a moral and religious people. Moral means simply knowing the difference between right and wrong. And our Constitution is only made for those who understand that there is such a thing as true and false, good and evil, up and down, a boy from a girl. We're living in a society right now. I could just make it up as I go. I could just make it up. Whatever suits me.
Yeah. Who are you today?
Make it. I know, exactly, right? I mean, I can be 57 different flavors, and it's all fluid. And I get to make the rules, and you just got to sit there and shut up and pretend that you're not confused as well.
So, Kathy, aside from voting you into office, what's the next step? What's our way forward through this?
Well, listen, for us, right, our campaign did the unthinkable. We were not supposed to have a snowball chance in Hades of coming remotely close in votes to my very progressive incumbent. Not only did we match her in votes at the polls on last Tuesday, but we showed that we can get the Republican, the conservative vote out. Now, up to this point, by the grace of God, I got some phone calls coming. Maybe the Republican establishment will start assisting. But up to this point, we have had no fundraisers because, of course, COVID-19 hit exactly when we started going out to do that. And we have relied solely on small dollar donations. So what do I need? If you want reasonable people, I don't care if I live in your district or not. You have to remember, it is the House of Representatives that impeached a duly elected president, that has already convened a council to start investigating him once more, and that is shoving these foolish ideas down the throat. If you want people who are going to go into office and begin to contend for the heart and mind of our nation, I need your help. I need your help badly.
And
right
where,
now.
Where do we go, dear?
KathyBarnettForCongress.com. KathyBarnettForCongress.com.
Just for clarity, Kathy has a K. Barnett has two T's and an E. And so it's KathyBarnettForCongress.com. And God bless you. You have a very powerful voice. Come back anytime. I really, we need your insight on these things, frankly.
Yes.
And you're a homeschooler.
Thank you so much.
I have to point that out.
I homeschooled for the past 6 years. I love it. I love the Lord, and I love my country. And that is the reason I never thought I would be doing what I'm doing. But it is for such a time as this. I see exactly why God has wired me the way he has, because it is right now that is my time to do what so many of us need to be doing, and that is being willing to stand up for what is right.
Yeah, yeah. And it's hard these days. Not to go on because I've said goodbye, but that's okay. It's difficult. It's difficult to stand for what's right. So Drew Brees, we'll talk just briefly about him. He came out and said you shouldn't kneel for the flag because people died to preserve the flag, and it stands for a good country, basically. And now he's apologized for saying that because he understands that people found that offensive and they were hurt by his words.
Whatever. I still won't kneel, and I'm black. So I kneel to one. And we call him the Lord of Lords and the King of Kings. So I will kneel down to no one else. And also, we have to remember, as people want to try to redefine vocabulary words, the left is good about that. The Black Lives Matter is today the exact same Black Lives Matter of 6 years ago, 5 years ago. And you only need to go onto their website and realize who it is that they are. Do I believe Black Lives Matter? Of course I believe Black Lives Matter, just like any other life would matter. But if Black Lives Matter for the organization, there were 49 people who also died on Memorial Day, who were shot on Memorial Day in Chicago by other Black people, 9 of whom died. I see no marches for them. For every 1,000 Black babies that are born, 477 are murdered in their mother's womb. That's a 32% kill rate. And then it drops down to 8% for Hispanics and 5% for white. What in the world? That's an annihilation of a whole generation of people. If you thought, lynching got nothing on Planned Parenthood. And where are the marches for those poor souls? Or even with just recently with retired former police chief David Dorn, shot in the face by simply trying to prevent looters from breaking into his friend's business? Where are the marches for him? We cannot allow, again, our emotions to trump logic. I will cry with the best of them. But at the same time, I have a brain and I'm choosing to use it. There's such a thing as right and wrong. And we need to get on the, we need to stop being wussies. We need to stop being punks and allowing people to punk us into saying things and doing things that we know inherently is not right. It's time to stand.
We should organize a protest march for David Dorn.
Oh my goodness. What about that? I will be right there. What about that? What about that? I mean, there is, I mean, listen, one life lost.
And a memorial and service not, for I mean, David Dorn and see who shows up.
I have talked, you know, a tremendous amount on national radio and television about what happened to George Floyd. I mean, it is indefensible. It is right. Anathema. I cannot believe, I couldn't even watch the entire thing. I had to just start reading the transcript.
But Kathy, everybody agreed that.
I can't do it.
Everybody agreed with that. So who's protesting?
Do you know what I mean? Like,
nobody disagreed. Nobody said, oh no, that was actually defensible. That was okay. Nobody said that.
And I don't care. And I don't care what George Floyd doesn't seem like an angel, right? The little stuff that I'm learning about him. And yet at the same time, if he had snatched the store, stuffed it into his pocket and ran off with it, he did not deserve to be murdered. And so we all can stand against that and say that is wrong. Now, again, I understand why Black people coming up from the South, I understand full well why Black people feel some kind of way when we see a police officer exercising a tremendous amount of force,
yes,
specifically on another Black person. I get it. I completely understand. And yet, You have to start checking off those boxes, right? Does one bad apple make the whole system systemically racist? It's like me saying one agitator make all protesters bad, well, and all protesters need to be locked up with them.
And by the way, not to stir the flames, but we don't actually know if this was a racist act or just an act of police brutality.
I have no idea, but all I know is that it was a white man who did it to a Black man.
Yes.
And I have Black, I'm from a Black family, raising a little Black boy. And so I would have been right there and locked on. So we don't have to overanalyze it. I mean, it was just wrong, and everyone said it was wrong, but apparently that's not enough, right? Because if seeing the heart of a nation rise up and condemn that foolishness was enough, then we would have got what we wanted, right, on the day of that that video going viral. But that's not enough. And I do understand the need to continue to move towards inclusion. There's a tremendous number of people, of minorities, who feel as though we live in a bifurcated system, one for them and one for the rest of the world, right, or for the rest of America.
Right.
And we do need to have conversations about how to make them fully included in the prosperity of this nation, right? And that's a legitimate conversation.
Sure.
But leaping over to say America is rotten at its core, that we need to tear the whole system down, because that's the ultimate goal.
Right.
America must die
in
order for the left, the uber left,
that's
the
squad their goal.
And the rest of them to have what they cannot have, what they really want, their utopian society, and you and I walking around here fully armed, right? Or you and I walking around here talking about we get to go to church when we want to.
Right.
These people, America as we know it, must die. That's the ultimate goal. Right now, not of all the protesters, but those agitators, there were two different groups that were named.
Yep.
That's the goal.
And sadly, that's the goal. The squad. There you go. Bring it right into the government. They're in our government now.
They're in our government. And what I'm asking for people to do is to put me in the government.
Yeah.
I will limit myself to just two terms. I love my life. I have a good life. I want to stay in my life. I want to see my babies. I don't want to be wrestling and fussing with folks.
So you're willing to, and I don't, this isn't to hold you to
four
it.
Four years.
But you're
four
saying,
no,
I just
hold me to it.
Okay. Two terms.
Two terms. I'm out. Right? Because it was never meant for people to get into office, accumulate all this power, and then die in office. I don't want that.
Right.
I don't want that. I love my country. You can Google read me. I never intended to run for politics. And then God began to minister to me.
Well,
began
listen,
to challenge.
You have a lot of work to do. Clearly, whether or not you end up where you think you're headed, you're headed somewhere, and it's a good place. And I want to jump on the train with you, Kathy Barnett. Go to KathyBarnettForCongress.com. The name of the book is Nothing to Lose, Everything to Gain. You are a shining light on the horizon, and I so appreciate you. Thanks for coming on the program.
Thank you. Blessings.
Wow. All right. That sort of blew me away because, she's got it all. And she's a vet to boot, if I understand correctly. She's just, she's brilliant. I've known her for a little while. Anyway, let me encourage you, if you want to be uplifted, go pick up our book, True Faith. Kevin and I wrote it. It's the story of us relying on our faith and showing you in a way how you can rely on your faith. I've even had atheists say they've really appreciated the book. Just for what it brought into their lives, even though they don't have faith like that. But if you want faith like that, you can see how it's done, called True Faith, at samsorbo.com. Thanks so much for listening. This is the Sam Sorbo Show. Now go enjoy the rest of your day.